It's time for America's most unique motorsports show, Mostly Motorsports with Scott Traylor, brought to you by Lucas Oil Products. It works.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Mostly Motorsports. I'm Scott Traylor, along with producer Austin O'Neill. Kirk Elliott sitting in with us today. It's Monday, and we got a lot to talk about. And, you know, Kirk normally sits in with us on Fridays, but there's been so much going on this weekend. And Kirk was up at the Silver Dollar Nationals up at I-80 Nebraska this last weekend up in Greenwood, Nebraska. And so we wanted to talk to him about that. Before I start off the show, though, I got to give a little bit of a little bit of a shout out. I don't know if many people know of Racing with Dio, Danny Laycock. He passed away here this last week, and we forgot to mention it on Friday. One of the pioneers in our industry of motorsports. And we're going to talk to Dean Mills a little bit later in the show about Dio and everything that he accomplished. He was one of the original Thursday Night Thunder guys. Man, back in the day, Kirk, Thursday Night Thunder was the deal, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. And wasn't he the guy that did the live audio from the Chili Bowl before we showed up down here?
He did some live audio down there before the Chili Bowl.
Yes.
Right, yeah. So
yeah, we've known him for a long time. Yeah, this is the first I heard about it.
Right.
I didn't know that until you brought it up here this morning.
You know, tragically, his wife passed away 1 year ago.
Oh, man, that's sad.
And from what I am being told is that Dio had congestive heart failure.
Hmm.
Now, I'm going to say this. I don't want anybody to hold it against me. But I think Dio died of a broken heart, if you want to know the truth. He was madly, madly in love with his wife. And when she passed away, that was a sad time for Dio. And if you would have read a lot of his posts and what she meant to him over the years that they were together, he constantly reminded people how much he missed her after her passing.
Wow.
She died of COVID, by the way. Mm. So anyway, long story short is that Dio has passed away, and we're going to give him his dues here a little bit later with Dean Mills. We're going to talk about that with him in just a little while. So anyway.
He was a big promoter of racing.
Listen,
I mean, he did shows back before we even knew what podcast was.
Right.
I mean,
he did a weekly show,
yeah.
And he did it at a local tavern in Indianapolis, and he did it for years and years, kind of like you and Kirk. He was around this business for a long, long time. So, yeah, it's definitely sad to hear about Dio passing away. He was one of the good guys, and did a lot for motorsports, more than most people can even imagine.
And did it for a long time.
Long, long time, yeah. So, anyway, sad story there. All right, Kirk, let's talk about the Silver Dollar Nationals. You were up there this weekend. Last night, Jonathan Davenport, he picks up the win, but it looked like the entire race that it looked like Tim McCready was the guy to beat, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, he started on the outside of the front row. Mike Merler on the pole. And at the start of the race, it was McCready out in front. And he led, I don't know how many of the first.
Up until lap, somewhere around 90.
Yeah.
Right? He lost that race just towards the end of that race.
It was an 80-lap race. It was 70-something.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So,
why did I keep thinking it was a 100-lap race?
Yeah. It was 48 laps before we saw our first yellow flag.
It was.
But he was dominating.
So somewhere around 70,
right,
is when JD started putting the pressure on him, right?
Yeah. And JD, you know, it was McCready really had the bottom line working to perfection. I mean,
right.
He hugged that car down at the bottom of the racetrack, and he was making it work. And then on that last stretch, you began to notice Jonathan Davenport diamonding the corners. He was kind of letting the car drift up high and then shooting down to the bottom. And he was really making up a lot of ground doing that, while McCready was just stayed to his line that made him successful throughout the race. And so Davenport caught up quickly, and I'm thinking to myself, this thing's coming down. Davenport's got something for McCready here, and sure enough, he did. And he was able to make the pass. He was just taking a different line into the corners than McCready was, and it worked for the 49.
You know, there for a bit, I thought Mike Marler was going to get up there and challenge Tim McCready because he got close to him a couple times.
Yeah.
But then eventually, McCready opened up a giant lead. I think it was like 4.5 seconds ahead at one point during that race.
He had a big lead. And McCready was doing a great job working traffic throughout that whole race. And that was the big part about it, is McCready getting through traffic, especially when there was a lot of it in the early portion of that race, first 48 laps before we saw a yellow flag. And the battle, you mentioned Mike Marler there at the end, that battle he had with Devin Moran there at the end.
Oh, yeah,
that
for
was,
sure.
That
yeah.
was very entertaining to watch that.
Earl Pearson Jr. looked like he was going to make a run up there for a minute, didn't it?
He did. He had a fast race car there for a lot of that race. So, I mean, it was, you know, it wasn't as good as some of the Silver Dollar Nationals we've seen, but you got to take
into because Tim McCready snuck it up for the most part? It's got Kirk.
I think that's part of it.
It has to be, because Tim McCready led every lap until they got up around 70.
Right.
Right?
But, you know, the rain out on Saturday night, the steady drizzle, never really rained hard, but they got up at 10 o'clock, and they just couldn't get it worked in.
Right.
And then I talked to Steve Kosiski after the races last night. He said, boy, I was really worried.
About rubber.
You know, they started the races at 5:30.
Right.
And so that's a little bit earlier than they probably wanted to, but it's a Sunday night, and you know, you wanted to get everybody out of there at a decent time, but he was really concerned about that track rubbering up. It did not rubber up.
It didn't rubber up. So just so you know, with six laps to go is when Jonathan Davenport took the lead.
There it is.
He took the lead on lap 74.
74.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
So, but anyway.
So if you're Tim McCready and you lead lap 1 through 73, you probably think you got a handle on this race.
Yeah. And he said, I've got a couple sound bites here. He said it's kind of a disadvantage being the leader because you can't see behind you. If you're the second place guy, you've got a little bit of an advantage on what's going on. So I think that was a lot of it. McCready just couldn't really see back there what Davenport was doing. So
Austin, as a driver and myself included, I know that when I'm leading, You always wonder where you need to be running on the racetrack, don't you?
Yeah, it's not as easy as, you know, watching the leader, you know, in front of you. So you're just pretty much relying on you know, hoping you have a big lead. But if you don't, listening to the cars around you, if you hear anybody coming, you know, as a racer, you can kind of tell if they're running the top or the bottom. But also, too, watching lap cars, that's the biggest thing. You know, with it being that slick, you couldn't see a lot of the track getting dirty at all. But, you know, most places we go with sprint car racing, you can watch it get dirty and know where lap cars are running. And if you're seeing lap cars in front of you on a different line and drive away, you know the guy behind you is probably running that line and you need to move around.
Well, do you think you're a better leader or follower, Austin?
Follower, it's easier.
Yeah, no doubt. Because
everybody's going to tell you that.
Yeah, I'm the same way.
Nobody wants to leave the white flag.
Hold on a second. I'll tell you this. Back when it was pavement racing was a little bit different. I'd like to be leading in pavement racing. Because at I-70 Speedway when we raced, there was only one line, right? And it took a guy with some really big stones to get up next to you on the outside at I-70 Speedway. So if you could run a good, straight, nice line at I-70 Speedway, It took a guy with a lot of courage to get up next to you on the outside at I-70.
And when I'm thinking about pavement racing, I'm thinking of radios. Didn't you have radios back then?
We did.
And you had mirrors, so you have a little more tools
radios,
than we do.
Radios, mirrors, we had more.
That helps. One guy I was really had my eyes on last night is Bobby Pierce. And he just, you know, he put that car up on the high side. He just couldn't make it stick.
He started third. He ended up running seventh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he tried. It didn't come without trying to make it work up there, but he just couldn't get it done.
Well, Kirk, so the news came out last night during the race. We heard Bob Dillner on the broadcast, and it was nice to see the broadcast on MAV TV last night. That was cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was
neat.
They've
been running a lot of those.
But Dillner said last night that they have a date for the Silver Dollar Nationals next year, but they never mentioned what racetrack they should run that at.
It's the same weekend as now.
Right, same weekend. So you and Austin and I were talking about this before we went on the air.
And we don't have any inside information.
We have zero inside information. You know nothing. But here's the thing. Out of the area where that racetrack is right now, I thought of another racetrack, Kurt. We thought about Jackson, Husetts, Knoxville. I'm going to throw one more in there.
Eagle,
Nebraska.
Eagle Raceway.
Run it right down the street to Eagle.
Yeah, they could stage
the Why event. Wouldn't that be a great place for that? Listen, Eagle puts on some of the best races that money can buy. You agree with that, right?
But is Roger Hayden willing to throw
I don't
a
know
lot
if Roger's willing to throw
so.
The money at it. What do you think, Austin? Do you think out of those four tracks, Eagle, Jackson, Husetts, or Knoxville, which one makes more sense to you?
I think Eagle would make more sense. It's
right down the road.
Yeah, you drive right by it. If you're coming from Kansas City, you drive right by it.
I drove right by it last night on the way home.
Yeah, that's your turn. I think it's off of 34. You turn right. Yep. Turn left to go to Eagle, turn right to go to I-80, and it's 10 miles
34
up the road.
And 63.
Yep. So, you know, I think I'm not sure on how big the facility is at Eagle. I'm not sure if it would be able to hold all the haulers, but I think if there's plenty of, you know, fields around the track you could stage stuff at, but they have the 305 Nationals at later in the year.
No, they could handle it.
And they have a ton of cars for that event. So, it would make sense just to take it down the road and run at Eagle. I mean, I don't know what the promotion team at Eagle's like, but yeah, I mean, I think that would be a big event for that track area too.
The one thing that I'm thinking about, and Kirk brought it up, I'm not sure Roger would want to invest that much money. There would have to be some corporate involvement.
Buy the track from him or something. I don't know.
Maybe they might do something like that too. No, because Joe and them are not going to promote racing anymore. They're tired of it, right? They're tired of promoting racing.
Now,
their business is so busy, and they've got these race series that they've got to take care of. They're too busy.
Now, the only plan, and again, I know nothing about where they might take this racetrack other than I'm speculating, and it has to do with Todd Quiring, who owns the Houston Speedway and the Jackson Motorplex. Promotes races up there.
He's got the money.
And the fact that they staged a Lucas Oil late model event on Tuesday night of Silver Nationals at a place that they haven't run late models a lot, but I think they were testing it out. Okay, let's bring the late models up here and see how this works up here at Houston Speedway. So either there or Jackson is my thought, but who knows? We'll find out soon enough.
Mike Marler kept his streak alive. He is now 16 for 16 running in the top five.
How about that?
Is that something?
That was awesome.
Man.
I mean, the consistency he has shown out there. I mean, he does it's the reliability. His cars are getting it to the end. He's not having, you know, he
was in the middle of that battle for the win last night. You cannot take Mike Marler out of the equation. He was there running second for a good long time.
And he's had some bad luck this year. He tore up a race car down there at Bristol early in the year. He had that bad incident on the rough racetrack at Lucas Oil Speedway and got hurt in that race car. But since that time, the consistency he's had out there has been pretty remarkable.
Yeah, no doubt.
Did you want to hear this sound from
if you want to play it, go ahead.
We've got, let's hear from the winner, Jonathan Davenport, who took over the lead with about six laps to go, and he's the million-dollar man, and he just added another payday to his 2022 winnings. And here's his thoughts after the big win last night.
I just finally got a little bit of clean air on the nose, and then McCready caught lap traffic, and they was running too wide there in front of him. And he didn't know quite the outside was as good as it was right through the middle. through three and four. So I just got a run on him. He was just kind of a sitting duck. So I hate it for him, but it was good for us.
Long green flag run at the beginning of the race, 48 laps. What difference did that make?
Probably a lot of people burnt their tires up there. There was a lot of slime on the bottom, so you could really overheat your tires pretty easy. So I was just trying to stay calm and trying to think about the last 20 laps and protect my tires.
So the track was about what you expected out there? I mean, was there any running room at all up high?
There was a little bit up high, not a whole lot. It was way wet in the bottom, and it was just slimy about the whole night. And it finally cleaned up just enough where we could start getting a little grip off the corner. But but it still raced well. You know, it blowed the slime across the racetrack, so you had to be on your toes what you was doing. But I thought they did a great job with the track prep for what they had starting at 5 o'clock today, and thought it raced pretty well.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about that. You know,
right.
He probably put more water than they ordinarily would at the beginning of the racetrack, knowing you're starting in the daytime, just to make sure that it stayed that way the rest of the night. Ordinarily, if they're running the regular time that they would on Saturday night, probably wouldn't put that much water on it.
Right.
At the beginning.
Right. I got to say this, though, because he said it in his post-race interview on MAV TV, the 18 car, I don't know if that was Dalton Wilson or if that was Jesse Sobbing.
Dalton Wilson.
Was it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of raced him a little hard for a lap car. They kind of held him up a little bit. Did you get a chance to watch any of that race last night, Austin?
I'm watching the replay of it now, and yeah, they just got to the 18 car, and he was running right there with Marler and Davenport.
Yeah,
that's a driver that just annoys you.
Maybe I think that was Jesse Sobbing, wasn't it?
It's one of the two 18 cars. Yeah. That's all I know.
But and of course, they don't put the letter big enough next to the number to tell which one's which.
Right, right.
Yeah.
But with that being said, JD said last night, he said, hey, man, that's just part of it. You know, you got to race those guys. They're running their own race. They're doing their own thing. But I sense that he brought it up. He was a little ticked off about it. I would think.
Yeah, it sounded that. Here's Tim McCready. He led so much of this race, looked like he was just going to run away and hide in this race. But here's his thoughts after he got passed by JD there towards the end.
Well, I just got kind of hung in traffic there. I think I started diamonding off at 2, and it showed him where to be probably a little because he was doing the same thing. And I got pinned under a car, and just he kind of got between me and him and the wall, and just that was it.
Did the track change much during the course of the 80 laps?
Not a ton. I mean, that one long yellow there made the track a little bit different, but other than that, it is what it is.
Mm.
There you go.
Not too happy, though.
No,
how could you be happy?
Who would be?
Leading 73 out of the 80 laps and lose the race.
Yeah.
How could you be happy with that?
Very disheartening.
Yeah.
He's a good guy, too, but he wasn't in a very good mood after that race.
No.
Last night.
How could he be, though, right?
Yeah.
I mean, how about Brad Sweet winning at Williams Grove? Now, this is shocking to me. That was his first win ever at Williams Grove.
How about that? Hard place to win.
When they said that, I couldn't get my head around it, to be honest with you. I would think that a guy like Brad Sweet, you would think, would have won there many times over the course of his career because he's been going there for so long. It's hard to believe that that is his first win and only his second win of 2022, right?
But most of the time they go there, the posse wins.
Right.
So, the regular outlaw guys don't win very often at Williams Grove Speedway. And after a sweep on Friday night, the only interloper into the podium was Danny Dietrich, who finished in second place.
Did you watch any of that race, Austin?
Yeah, we had it on the TV in the trailer at the lake, and he just pretty much – I thought – you know, Donnie would probably have, you know, a better shot starting up on the front row.
I did, too. I thought he was going to win it.
But, you know, I was more surprised to see Lance DeWeese get by, you know, Brent Marks the night before and steal on the last restart. That was what, out of both races that week, or that weekend,
right.
I was more surprised on Friday night's finish.
How about the Carson Macedo, Kyle Larson, and Anthony Macri getting together. Did you see the damage on the 41 car when they brought him into the pits? The top wing was destroyed. The nose wing was destroyed. The front axle was knocked out of it. They get the front axle in it. They pull the nose wing off and just leave it off. And then he comes back in after they run a lap, and they rip off the left sideboard off the top wing. Did you see that?
Yeah, we were sitting there watching that, and it's just like, what are they doing? I mean,
right.
That out of okay, you might be able to get away with that at a you know little quarter mile or whatever, but at
not
Williams
that
Grove, that will never work. And yeah, I mean, you know, at some point you're just gonna try and salvage some points for your championship deal, but yeah, if you can't put at least a top wing on it, that's not gonna do you any good. But
right.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I'm pretty sure they were down a crew member with Clyde Nitt being gone. Maybe if you know Clyde was there, that they would be able to get that fixed. But still, I mean, that's gonna be a tough blow to his championship standings.
Yeah, no doubt.
How about all the guys who ran 1-2-3, the posse, Brent Marks and Lance DeWeese, Marks and Anthony Macri, all finished outside the top 10 on Saturday night.
Right.
They weren't nearly as good Saturday night as they were Friday.
All right, we're going to stretch this segment out just a little bit here. How about the Danny Dietrich, Freddie Raymer incident that they had in the pits? Did you see any of that, Kurt?
I missed that. I heard you talking about that, but I didn't see that.
I know Austin saw it. What did you think of that? It was kind of amusing, to be honest with you, because here comes Double D coming down through the pits, and next thing you know, Freddie Raymer, and I think it was his dad, right?
Freddie Raymer, the dad, and the crew.
Jump him while he's still in the car. First of all, why would you even stop? I would just keep rolling on by him, right? I'd just go to my pits. Come down to my pits if you want to fight, right?
Well, I'm pretty sure there was a block in the road where he couldn't get through and was forced to stop.
Yeah. So, let me ask you this. Is that bull when somebody jumps you when you're in the car like that? What do you feel about that when somebody tries to attack you while you're still strapped into your race car? What do you think about that?
I mean, if you're that, you know, mad and fired up at him.
Right.
Why don't you just wait till he gets out of the car? I mean, if I was little Freddie Raymer, he did it the best way to keep himself, you know, safe. But I would definitely not want to be, you know, toe-to-toe with Danny Dietrich outside the car.
Yeah.
Danny's not a small dude at all. And I feel like Danny puts off the vibe that, you know, he'll just stomp you down on the ground
right.
And not even bat an eye at it.
Marie, one of our favorites, she said, did you see Gravel jump in to break up the fight?
Yeah, so if...
He kept jogging down there,
yeah,
didn't
there's,
he?
There's a video. It's like, I can't remember where I found it at. But, no, he came running down there because he was parked, you know, four or five trailers away from it. And you look up in the top corner of the video, and here comes David Gravel running down there to being
right.
part of it with a smile on his face. And
yeah.
And I'm not really sure if he was much help, but I think he got his entertainment's worth for the night.
Gravel's not a
right.
real big guy either, is he?
No.
Well, it doesn't matter if he's a scrapper.
How about that?
Hey, listen, some of the toughest guys I ever fought in my life were little guys.
Yeah.
Just so you know.
And that wasn't the only incident where a driver got attacked while strapped in his car. How about C.J. Leary going after Robert Ballew the other night at Gas City?
Let me tell you something about that incident. I'm going to say this. I think what C.J. Leary did to Robert Ballew was bullshit. You don't go up and you don't kick somebody while they're in their car.
If you're going to go up there and do that anyways... Don't fall.
Then he fell down on top of it.
CJ, I mean, you're not making yourself look very good. And that's not the first time he's gotten to an altercation with someone and come out on the wrong end of it.
Right? Now, Brady Bacon had a different tact when he got
Brady
flipped
just
off the back straight. He just walked up and had a conversation
him.
With him. He just said he wasn't happy about
hold
it.
Hold on a second. If you're the Macho Man, I'm just saying it. If your nickname is the Macho Man, what do you do? if you're the macho man, you throw some haymakers.
I don't think he has to.
I'm just saying it. If your nickname is the macho man, you need to be tough. I love Brady Bacon.
Did he get
I love his family.
But he didn't come up with that name.
Leon and Kelly.
Right.
Ceciana. I love all of those guys. But I'm just telling you, if my nickname's the macho man, I'm going to get up in their grill and I'm going to throw some wingers.
No, that's not Brady Bacon. That's not who he is.
You want to add anything to that, Austin?
Yeah, I'm not. Yeah, Kirk's right. That's really not Brady. I mean,
your name's the Macho Man.
Did he get? He didn't name himself that, did he? Yeah. Somebody else gave him that name.
No, he took on that name. We call. What did we used to call him when he
Junebug or
Junebug?
Yeah, he probably didn't like that either.
He probably didn't.
No, Brady handled that like I expected he would. He wasn't happy about it when he got flipped over on the back straightaway.
Right.
He went for a wild ride, and he was pretty ticked off. And Brady's got – that's something when Brady gets really ticked off.
Right.
But he walked up to the car. I knew he wouldn't throw any punches at Robert Ballou.
Well,
he was going to express his views about the whole
he
situation.
He has more to lose than CJ does.
Angie Battles. And, you know, we love Angie. She's one of the best. She says, Scott, you know he isn't going to throw punches.
No.
Not his style.
Nope.
I would have.
Well, you're not Brady Bacon either.
You know, did I ever tell you what my grandfather's name was?
I'm not sure.
His name was Ruff.
Ruff.
And you know what he used to say to people all the time? Rough and tough and can't get enough. That's what my grandpa used to say.
But the macho man.
I'm a little bit like my grandpa.
The macho man, you can look at it this way.
I never met him.
You don't want Brady Bacon to throw any punches at you. He doesn't have to.
Right. Paul, you're probably right. You know, let me just say this, Paul, that back in the day when I raced, I was a roughneck. And I wanted to fight anybody that wanted to fight me. And I got in a little bit of a rumble when I was about 38 years old. And that was the last time I've been in a fight. I was 38 years old last time I got into a fight. I've had to talk my way out of a few of them since then. But I'll just say it. I was never one of the guys that you wanted to come up and scrap with in the pits. Because I would oblige you. So just so you know, I was a roughneck when I raced.
As a fan, I love it. You know, let's get the fight right out there where everybody can see
it. If you're going to do it on the front straightaway.
Absolutely.
Right?
Don't do it in behind the holler somewhere where nobody can see what's going on.
Yeah, no doubt.
Do it out in front of everybody. So.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, some pretty big news yesterday, Kirk, with the Cup race. The top two finishers DQ'd. Chase Elliott picks up the win. He ran third. We're going to talk about that with Lee Spencer next right here on Mostly Motorsports. Mostly Motorsports is brought to you by Lucas Oil Products. It works.
You're listening to Mostly Motorsports with Scott Traylor.
There is less than 1/100th of an inch of motor oil protecting your car's engine. Friction and heat causes engine oil to experience thermal breakdown, weakening its ability to protect the engine and its parts. Lucas Heavy Duty Oil Stabilizer is specially formulated to resist thermal breakdown, protect vital engine parts, and extend the life of your engine. It also stops smoking, knocking, and oil consumption in worn engines. Lucas Heavy Duty Oil Stabilizer. Keep that engine alive.
Go harder, faster, stronger with Rod and Supply. Whether you are running industrial, farming equipment, or a race car, Rod and Supply has the assortment of rod ends, radius rods, and specialty products that will help you lead the field in performance. Our superior design means our rod ends last longer and perform better, giving you the edge on the track and saving you money. Contact Rod and Supply or order online today at rodandsupply.com. We don't just sell them, we race them. Rodandsupply.com, serving the racing community for over 30 years.
Next to your vehicle's engine, your transmission is the most important component of your car. If it's not properly maintained, your car may not shift properly,
By adding Lucas Transmission Fix to your transmission, it cleans and lubricates sticking valves for proper shifting, renews worn bands to stop slipping, stops seal leaks, will not void new car warranties, contains no harmful solvents. Lucas Transmission Fix. It works.
Here at Specialty Sportswear, in-house, we do all of the screen printing, all the embroidery. We do some vinyl. The other add specialty items like your pens, magnets, notepads, calendars. You can actually buy that, build your business, and make it larger. We have the largest screen printing process and the largest embroidery anywhere around in the area. We can do stuff all the way from your school clubs to sports teams, a professional look in the office. If you can imagine it, we can do it for you.
Missouri's must-play getaway, Osage National Golf Resort.
3 9-hole whole courses to choose from at the Lake of the Ozarks in the Osage River Valley. Stay and play packages in our first-class condos. A beautiful clubhouse complete with pro shop and exercise facilities. A large pool for relaxation and families. The Eagle View Sports Bar and Grill. Great wedding facilities. Go online and make your tee time today.
One of the main reasons for poor vehicle performance is a dirty fuel system. It can cause decreased fuel economy and actually do harm to your engine over time. By adding Lucas Fuel Treatment to your vehicle, it cleans and lubricates the entire fuel system. Pump, carburetors, fuel injectors, and valves as you drive. It also improves your vehicle's performance. It's a non-solvent product designed to protect both gasoline and diesel engines. Lucas Fuel Treatment. It works.
Race fans, the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum is open 7 days a week, year-round, for you to come in and check out all of the wonderful race cars on display in the museum. And our online store at SprintCarStuff.com is open 24 hours a day for you to check out everything that we have in stock for Sprint Car fans. Whether it's for a birthday, anniversary, or Christmas, SprintCarStuff.com has it all. That's at the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum in Knoxville.
At Lucas Oil, we take pride in creating problem-solving products to make your car care easier. We protect your vehicle and make it run longer so you can focus on the things that matter most. Whether it's commuting to work, visiting a loved one, taking the kids where they need to go, going to the big game, or anywhere life takes you, Lucas Oil is committed to getting you there for all of life's important moments. Lucas Oil, it works.
You're listening to Mostly Motorsports with Scott Traylor.
Hey, everybody. I want to remind you that right now up at the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame, there is a track tribute to Ascot Park going on through October 1st. They've got a lot of memorabilia up there. They've got videos, driver uniforms, helmets, cars that used to race at Ascot Park. This racetrack was in Southern California. It was a track that I used to go to back in the late 70s and early 80s, a fantastic racetrack. They used to race there four nights a week. It was such a great venue, and they've got a great track tribute going on right now up at the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum if you'd like to go up there and check it out. If you're going to go up to Knoxville and watch the races, you need to go over to the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum and check it out. And while you're over there, maybe buy a raffle ticket for the 2022 IMSA GTLM Championship Edition C8R Corvette. They will be given away on Saturday, August 13th during the Knoxville Nationals. Remember, folks, this is only one of 1,000 Corvettes that are made like this. This is a very limited production Corvette that they have up there. It's a 2022 IMSA. IMSA, you know about IMSA, road racing, right? GTLM Championship Edition C8R Corvette. And again, they're going to be doing the drawing on that on Saturday, August 13th during the Knoxville Nationals. And if you can't make it up to the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum, you can always do it online at Corvette, the letter C, the number 8, the letter R, contest.com. That's Corvette, C8R, contest.com. And while you're up there, oh, and you get $25,000 with that car, too. so they can help you with the taxes a little bit. And while you're up there, you can also buy a raffle ticket for the 2022 Triple X Chassis 410 Sprint Car that they're giving away up there. Listen, folks, the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame, when you make these donations to the Sprint Car or the Corvette, that money goes directly to the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum. It helps keep the museum afloat. So you need to get up there. And if you can't make it up to the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum, then you can always do it online at SprintCarRaffle.com. That's SprintCarRaffle.com. And it, that's only if you can't make it up to the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum. It is a it's such a great place. If you want to know the history about sprint car racing, there's only one place to do it, and that's at the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum up on Highway 14 in Knoxville, Iowa. If you're going to go to the races, you need to go to the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum.
I always take my checkbook in there every year. I make and visit up there. And
Kirk,
renew my membership and put the money into that Corvette.
We got a brick up there, don't we? Didn't we buy a brick up there one year?
Yes, we have a brick up there. Yeah. It's on the second floor.
Yeah. All right, let's bring in our guest, and we haven't talked to her for a while. She's been on vacation. Lee Spencer joins us now on the show. Lee, how you doing?
I'm super. How are you all?
Well, we're doing good. How was your vacation? Did you love it?
Oh, it was fabulous.
Yeah. Can you give us a little bit of a rundown where you went, what you did, and were you, was it a really good time?
Oh yeah, it was pretty spectacular. We flew into Fairbanks and then went through Denali National Park, stayed up at Denali, and worked our way down to the coast and took a cruise down to Vancouver from, I guess it was Anchorage or Juneau. I'm on.
Right.
Very little sleep right now, so it was just mind blowing how beautiful and pristine it was, and just one of those trips of a lifetime.
Was it cold up there?
Probably the lowest it got was 55. Oh. When we were in Glacier Bay. When we were on the boat and just kind of docked in Glacier Bay to see the glaciers, I was sunbathing on our deck. So,
oh, nice.
That's kind of mind blowing to see all that ice and everything. And it's like, 80 degrees on the deck because the sun's just beating down. And, that was just one of those really cool experiences, just brought out the cocktails in a good book and sat by the glacier.
Now, listen, the Queen Mary hit a glacier. Were you a little nervous when you're out there floating around in those glaciers that the boat might hit one of them?
No. I mean, you have to understand, with the kind of sonar that they have now, it's just not a problem.
Yeah, no doubt. So. All right, so, man, oh, man.
I came back just in town, didn't I?
Yeah, you perfect timing. Did you have to rewrite your story yesterday after you had already written it?
I updated the top of it. I didn't go full-blown because it's like, I don't know. As soon as I get off here, I'm going to go back and listen to the rest of the Chase Elliott audio from this morning because, that was just a bizarre situation and nothing I've seen in my lifetime. So, kind of interesting turn of events, I would say.
This isn't the first time that this team has been penalized for something like this, though, right?
Well, you have to understand, we're all in virgin territory with the new car.
That's
and
true.
So that kind of changed the dynamic of everything. And it's just really kind of crazy because it's they said at the beginning of the year just not to mess with anything because the repercussions would be huge. And, if you listen to the press conference yesterday with Brad Moran and the, post-race after he came out and said that they had both violated, the terms of the rules and had messed with the front fascia of the car. you know, he said that there would be no more penalties. And I'm not sure if they really wanted to make a point, if just, you know, disqualifying and taking away the points is enough. I mean, I'm surprised they still have their crew chiefs. I'm surprised there's nothing monetary. You know, the whole thing is just kind of bizarre. But, you know, I guess that's, it is what it is. But right. I was kind of, and I'm not, you know, I'm not trying to throw napalm onto the fire. I'm just saying, I assume that if somebody messed with the integrity of the composite body pieces to try to get an advantage, that NASCAR would really throw the book out of them. And I'm not sure that, you know, losing the points for the win is enough.
Yeah. Do you think that we're going to see some crew chiefs taken out of the box and some big fines and some points? Do you think we're going to see that tomorrow?
No, because, you know, Brad Moran came out, and unless I won't say what he said was wrong or false, but, you know, unless he just completely misread the room before he came into the media center, he said that there wouldn't be any further penalties.
Oh,
but,
I gotcha.
You know, I just, as much as they have tried to make the point that this was, you know, hardcore, and that they would make an example of the first person to step over the line, I mean, you know, how many times have you been to a dirt track and the guy that comes in light is disqualified, and
right.
nobody thinks twice about it because they know what the rules are going in. And so I just, you know, I think in this case, and like I said, I am not trying to put, you know, I'm not trying to put kerosene or anything on the fire.
Right.
I'm not, you know, I don't care either way, whether it was Gibbs or, you know, BJ McLeod who got busted. My whole point is NASCAR said that they were going to make an example out of who the first person to cross the line, and I'm not sure just being disqualified gets that point delivered.
Right. The penalty might...
If indeed, right? I mean, if indeed this was blatant cheating and not a situation where Denny, you know, hit the wall in practice like he did, and they went to Bondo it, and therefore, when they took the wrap off the car, they realized that, you know, it wasn't just a repair. It was intentionally done to gain an advantage over the competition. But I will say that all the Gibbs cars were running in the top 10 all day. And,
right.
You know, they made a mockery out of Ford, who only had Michael McDowell waving the blue oval banner at the end of that race yesterday.
Right. Do you think that NASCAR needs to make one of these teams miss a race? Would the penalty be severe enough if they made him do that?
Well, I mean, that's what it is, right? They did miss the race because they lost all their points.
That's true.
So, you know, they did lose the race. But, you know, I think about Logano, you know, the year he got busted, and I think of what they did to Keselowski this year at the start of the season, and, you know, they put him in playoff jail, you know, nothing short of a win, and being in the top 30 in points is going to get Brad Keselowski into the playoffs, but, you know, Denny's sitting there, and this would have been win number three, and now it's win number two, I guess, and so, you know, and he and Kyle are both there where they need to be in the, you know, in the point standings, but it's just like, you know, you're just kind of, I don't know. I mean, I haven't seen whether or not that they have elected to appeal yet. I mean, I just got home, and so I haven't gone through my stuff, and, you know, still waiting to see what happens. I mean, you know, I'm just going over the Chase stuff now.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, it's just, I just don't even know what to, you know, I don't know what to think about this right now.
Hey, Lee, this is Kirk. I got to tell you, I was driving back.
Hi, Kirk. How are you?
Hey, great. I had such a great
have
racing day yesterday.
Have you been behaving yourself while I've been gone?
I have been. Yesterday was such a great day because I'm driving from Iowa Speedway, went to the IndyCar race yesterday, clear across Iowa to I-80 last night, and I'm listening to all the post-race coverage on Sirius XM, and Claire B. Lang makes this announcement. They just DQ'd the 11 and the 18 car, and the 9 is the winner. More to come. And I'm going, say what?
Huh?
And then Brad
Did
Gilley.
Did he about have to pull off the road?
Yeah.
Right. About,
Brad Gilley is on there. He couldn't even, there was silence. He goes, say what? So I'm listening to all this coverage. But the thing that's crossing my mind right now is, don't they inspect these? Wouldn't this be something they would have spotted in the pre-race inspection, or was this something they did after pre-race inspection during the race? I want to know what happened between the pre-race inspection and the post-race inspection of what they're talking about, how this would happen, and they didn't catch it beforehand.
Well, I think Claire kind of went into it a little. I mean, I listened to the whole thing because I had somebody who was at the Iowa race coming and staying with me last night, and they didn't get here until 2:30 this morning.
Yeah.
So that's why if I'm a little, you know, groggy, you know why? Because I'm on 4 hours of
right.
sleep and fumes. We've all been there, right? So,
yep.
But I mean, you know, basically from what I understand and what, you know, has been in the way it's been explained is this was something that when they went to tear down and they took the wrap off the car, and you know how, I mean, it's not like they do custom paint shops on these cars anymore. They add this, you know, the vinyl wrap,
right.
And they use like blow dryers and, you know, adhere it to the composite bodies. And when they took the wrap off, that's when they discovered it.
Oh,
and,
that explains
you know,
it.
From what yeah. the way that it's been explained to me is that if they, you know, brought all these cars unwrapped to the track and then had to wrap them at the track, it would make more work for the teams. Now, the way I see
right.
it, maybe that's what they need to do. You know, maybe there were more than just those two. Here's my, you know, thinking on this. If indeed, you know, if they were going to take back the 18 and 11 and declare the 9 the winner, then the 9 should have gone back. You know, Ricky Stenhouse Jr. shouldn't have been the damn random. They should have taken the winner. The winner
right.
of the car needs to go back to the R&D center as well. And that's another issue that I have with all of this, right? Because my feeling is that they start unwrapping these cars in post-race, and if more of them get unwrapped, I think you bring them in unwrapped when you get to the track and then make the teams, you know, wrap them.
Wrap them at the track, right.
Wrap them at the track
yeah.
because, you know, they can't unwrap them all and then wrap them again. You know, everybody said, well, that would take too much work. Well, you know, I remember when they used to change engines between practice and and qualifying. And, I mean, you know, we're talking about something that, yeah, it takes time, but wouldn't you rather make sure you have it right going in rather than having a situation where you've so completely upset the apple cart, where you've taken the second-place finisher whose sponsor sponsored the race and is leaving. I mean, you know, you're talking about one of the longest sponsors in NASCAR is leaving, but their name was on the race yesterday, and their driver, their current driver who has M&Ms emblazoned on his car is disqualified. This all could have been prevented if they had looked at, you know, and maybe I just, you know, I'm throwing something out there that would just be, impossible to fathom for these race teams, but I have seen them wrap cars at the track when they have had a, you know, had to go to a backup or this,
right.
that, and the other, and so
they can do it pretty quick.
I don't think, you know, I would rather them put blank cars going through the inspection process and then let the teams wrap them than have to go through what we went through on Sunday.
Somebody online, Ethan, said, wouldn't that drive up the expense of the teams being able to have to bring in more people to do the wraps? But you know what? If that keeps them from cheating, I think that's the thing to do, really.
If that means that we're not just qualifying, you know, going through all this, and then Kirk Elliott's going home from a race and hearing this and thinking, I just watched Denny Hamlin have a phenomenal victory lane celebration, and all the sponsors were there, and all the, you know, partners were there, and we all just had a good old time, and and you know, his daughter's up there, and she's waving the flag, and she's having, you know, making memories that'll last a lifetime, and then boom, you know, if it means that the integrity of the sport is not compromised in post race, then maybe that's something we need to look at.
Yeah, right. Claire B's doing all these yucky up interviews in Victory Circle with all the winners and the crew chief and Joe Gibbs, and she did all these interviews.
Right.
And, oh, forget about all that. None of that matters now.
Right.
For somebody who has done those interviews and has even, you know, sent Claire B, you know, post-race audio if she misses something, or you know, and have had it sent to me, or has had to do that, and then it's Monday, and all of that audio is crap. I mean,
forget it.
Jack.
Yeah.
You know, it's like all those hours you put in, you know, to go and interview the drivers, to cut up the audio, to send the audio, you know, to produce the audio, and then you got crap. I mean, it's like, I don't know. I in some ways, you know, I feel there's no winners here. I mean, even Chase Elliott this morning on the Zoom, he didn't feel like he won.
Yeah, he wasn't,
you know,
happy.
He wasn't happy about it.
Right.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think there are a lot of people who feel like this is long overdue, that, you know, it's about time NASCAR, you know, grew a pair and took wins away. But, man, you know, could this have been prevented had we just, you know, done some of the, you know, I mean, just changed the logistics ahead of time, so we weren't put into this position? Because now people are talking about it, and probably the funniest thing that was said to me, I don't know if you guys, well, I know Kirk didn't because he was at the race at Iowa Speedway, which had a phenomenal crowd last night, or yesterday, because we had that on our bottom screen. But you're driving home from the track, and then you get that information, or after it, you went and bought a Denny Hamlin T-shirt to commemorate it, only to find out that you should have gone to the number 9 transporter merch truck or whatever.
Right. Well, Lee, listen, I'm sorry we're going to have to let you go, but we've got Dean Mills on here. I don't know if you know about Danny Laycock passing away. You know, racing with Dio? Do you remember racing with Dio?
No, but I just, you know, I think Dean's a great guest, and I will pop off and talk to you guys on Saturday from Indy.
All right. Well, I'm glad that you enjoyed your trip, and I'm glad that you had a great time, and you didn't do any work while you were gone, did you?
You apparently don't read Racing Scoop then, huh?
You did a little work. Yeah, you did some work.
I read Racing Scoop. I read Racing Scoop, but okay. I just didn't know you kind of.
I posted features and I mean, I didn't do race reports, but I posted features and commentary.
You kind of pumped the brakes a little bit, but that's okay. We got to do that once in a while.
She did a lot still.
Listen, vacation.
Look at what our time off is from December and January. Probably not the best 2 months to take cruise in Alaska.
Right.
No, but you know what? I wish I would have been there with you. That would have been fun.
Oh, you would have had, you and Dee would have had a ball.
I know it. She is dying to go on vacation as we speak.
Alaska is on my bucket list.
I need the rest of the month just to dry out.
You know, the problem is that Deidre and I, we're so used to traveling all the time, and we haven't went anywhere this year. And it's kind of eating
at
us. I think we're going to go to Knoxville this weekend, though.
Well, good.
Yeah.
That'll be fun.
Yeah. All right, Lee.
All right, kids.
Thanks so much.
Take care.
Appreciate you.
Bye.
All right. All right. Let's bring up Dean Mills now on the show. And, man, it's kind of sad to talk about old Danny passing away, but racing with Dio, he was such a legend in our sport, wasn't he, Dean?
Yes, he was. Kind of a larger-than-life character.
Yeah.
Who was polarizing in some ways. You know, he had his detractors. But he was definitely, you know, somebody who shaped the way short track racing was viewed on television.
Yeah. Now, you worked with he really started out with Thursday Night Thunder. Is that when he got his first break, really?
Well, actually, he helped usher Thursday Night Thunder into being. You know, Danny had deep ties with the United States Auto Club. His family, his entire family, has always been deeply rooted in USAC. And he actually helped help bring Lingner Group, Terry Lingner and his production company, to the table to put races on the air. And
right.
I mean, anybody who grew up watching or in the sport in the 90s, you know, the late 80s and early 90s, you know, grew up watching Thursday Night Thunder,
mm-hmm.
watching races on the weekend on ESPN, and it was just one of the biggest things in the world. It was like having, you know, it was just like, you know, speed sport was.
You look
forward to these things, you know, getting the information. And here was something where you could actually see races on national television, short track races, on a weekly basis. It was really huge that, you know, and Danny had a big part in that.
Yeah. So I've got to say this, man. It's kind of tragic, to be honest with you. His wife passed away about a year ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, she died in December of 2020 from COVID.
Right.
Drew was a good friend and a very bombastic person herself. The two of them together, they were quite the pair.
Right.
Neither one of them had any real shame.
Right. No, I know that. Yeah. They were kind of open. They were kind of open about their relationship a little bit, right?
And they were, you know, not afraid to just be themselves. And
right.
The world needs more people like that, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Maybe not quite in their style, but you know, I got to know Danny. I actually first met him at the first post Ascot Turkey Night, mm-hmm. in November 28th of 91. We were at Saga Speedway, and Stan Fox won his second in a row Turkey Night. First one at Ascot, then that one, and we became friends. We exchanged numbers. We kept in touch, and you know, we didn't always have the smoothest relationship because, you know, it's a competitive industry, but
right.
We always remain friends, and we remain friends to the end. I was fortunate enough to see Dan and you know, say goodbye, and I'm very grateful for that opportunity.
Yeah. Well, it's such a huge loss. We lost the captain earlier, you know, and now Danny is gone.
Huh? It was a year ago.
One year ago.
A couple
of the pioneers in our sport, right? The captain and Danny both.
Yeah, and you know, I was glad to see Greg get in the Hall of Fame. I believe that Dan belongs in the Hall of Fame. but
I agree.
His reputation precedes him a little bit. You know, like I said, he was a polarizing figure because he was so unabashedly outspoken and didn't necessarily, you know, march to the beat of everybody's drum. It was to his own. And
hey, so, hey, Dean, he's a little bit like you and I.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Which is what I respect about him, you know, and
yeah.
I feel like, you know, there aren't enough men in this world who tell it like it is, that they'll tell you what they want, you know, what you want to hear. And I just feel like the days of, you know, men who spoke up and said, hey, you know, the emperor has no clothes.
Right.
They're over, you know. And
yeah.
It's one of those things where, you know, I like it when a man is straight with me. Regardless of what he's telling me, I'll have more respect for you, you know, and I know Dan was the same way. You're the same way. It, you know, it's just, I don't know. I think the Sprint Car Hall of Fame is something that should be, you should get there on your merits. And Dan Laycock was a very influential person in this sport at a time that, you know, where there wasn't much television, and he helped make that happen. He helped usher in that era, and very instrumental in that. You know, his weekly TV show, Dio and the King, where they show highlights on local TV of the weekend's racing,
right?
You know, 30 minutes a day or 30 minutes a week, and it just was like, you know, how some people grew up as that is their Saturday morning cartoon, you know? It's just one of those things that I feel like we have a tendency to focus on image,
right,
instead of somebody's, you know, somebody's doing, you know, their
yeah,
the word I'm looking for, their work, you know, their, yeah. I don't know. I think somebody needs to get Dan Laycock in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. Well, we're gonna see if we can make that happen here on Mostly Motorsports. Dean, I want to talk to you a little bit. You're shooting Sprint Week, right?
Yeah. Yes, I am.
So what? I'm gonna ask you, and I want you to be honest, like you are.
Yeah.
I want to know what you thought of C.J. Leary going over there and kicking Robert Ballew in his car. I think it's bullshit.
So when it happened, like, we'd already had Bacon in come in contact with Ballew and flip off the end of the racetrack. I thought that was an incidental contact.
Yep.
Robert got a big left rear drive. It shot him up into the slick. He pitched away from it, tried to get away from Brady, but he was committed. Brady actually kind of, you know, basically the left rear swung left on him, and they came together and it flew off the track. And then Brady walks down and cheers. You know, everybody's like, Brady,
right.
Brady
wasn't
up and he talks to him.
Brady wasn't gonna do anything.
Right.
Yeah.
Brady sauntered over there though to basically give him a piece of his mind.
Right.
He did, and then walked off. Well, CJ had a front row seat for that crash.
Right.
So when it happened to him, he was pissed. He got out of the car. Most people don't know this. He had a bit of a bloody nose from the crash.
Oh, no kidding.
And he runs over, and, you know, I'm thinking as he's running, you better throw a punch or something.
Right.
You're going to run. Like, if you hustle over there, you better do something.
Yeah.
And when he kicked him, you know, it was a glance and blow, hit Robert in the shoulder.
Right.
And he fell over, and
that was funny.
What's that?
That was funny when he fell.
Right. But then he got up, and he actually got into him and kicked him pretty good.
Yeah.
I don't know. Robert is the bad boy of our of our racing fraternity, you know, he's one of the bad boys. The guy a lot of people love to hate. And he has a cult following that love him for his brashness.
Openness.
His ability to,
right.
What's that?
And how open he is with his thoughts.
Yeah. I could do a little less with a little less complaining myself, but but Robert is who he is, and he's gonna say it the way he sees it. And I don't know, I think it was like that first night of Sprint Week, it had a whole lot of everything.
Yeah.
If you're into the crashes, it had it. If you're into the good racing, into just good hard racing with no contact, it had it too.
Right.
If you're into fisticuffs and all that, it had it all.
Right.
And then unfortunately we get rained out at Kokomo, which we get pushed back to Tuesday. And then the last night we're at Lawrenceburg and we didn't get to run the feature. So kind of been a bummer because we had so much momentum coming after the first night.
Right.
So I don't know. As far as how I feel about it, to me it was just, it was another night at the racetrack that happened to be very entertaining.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not for guys hitting each other on the racetrack. I definitely am not. But after watching both of those incidents in slow-mo, I don't feel like Robert was malicious. I just think
he was just being Robert.
Yeah. And so there's you mess with the bull, you get the horn.
Yeah.
What's CJ Leary going to do to Robert sitting in a race car?
Nothing.
I don't know.
Nothing. Right.
You'd have to get him to get out and take you on man to man, and I don't think either one of those guys is really ready to fight.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, no doubt.
So
well, we watched the Brady Bacon flip. We watched the C.J. Leary flip, and that was a pretty tough flip for C.J. because his tail tank come off of that car when he got upside down too.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's always a concern. And he was on the front stretch. Obviously your chief concern is always the fan.
Yep, no doubt.
He knows what he's getting into when he straps in a race car, but the fan obviously is,
Gotta protect the fans. All right. Well, Dean, I appreciate you coming on and shooting the bull with us here a little bit on Mostly Motorsports. Again, it's all brought to you by Lucas Oil Products. It works. Dean, where are you going to be at? Where are you at tonight?
We are at Circle City Raceway, the new racetrack on the south side of Indy.
Yeah.
I think we're going to be all right weather-wise. Then we move to Kokomo tomorrow. The makeup date. Kokomo is my favorite racetrack in the country. And it's Terre Haute and Bloomington or Terre Haute, Lincoln Park, Bloomington, and Hopstadt. And we're in the midst of 7 straight days of racing now.
Yeah.
So,
Our boy Jeff is going to do ASES Speed Week. He just got called in because the normal cameraman, who is not very good, by the way, just Jeff got called in, and the ASES National Tour broadcasts are going to be much better. Just so you know.
Yeah, Jeff is one of the best in the business.
The very best.
So anytime doing a broadcast, it's for the better.
Yeah, no doubt. Dean, thanks so much for coming on the show, man. We really appreciate you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. And, and as Theo would say, woo, racing.
All right, buddy. Well, appreciate you. There you have it. Dean Mills joining us here on the show. What do you have? Any thoughts about that, Kurt?
No, I mean, Dean talking about Jeff Christensen, great cameraman. Dean himself is one of the best there is.
Oh, God, I shouldn't say this, but I'm going to say it. The National Tour, ASCS National Tour broadcast, and I'm only saying this because I was out there and did it for all these years, it's disturbing to me to watch them. The camera work's not that good. Too much dead air. Not enough people talking, filling. You know, when me and Scotty were out there, we always filled, didn't we, Kurt?
Well, they were never going to do it the way you did it.
Well, I'm just telling you right now, it just. I better keep my mouth shut.
Hey, all I can say is it's great to see Wayne Johnson back up there after he'd been hurt.
Oh, yeah, that was
and
good.
And sat out a race for him to come back and win. That was good news.
Yeah, no, that was all good. Yeah. All right, so I better keep my mouth shut. No, I'm not going to keep my mouth shut because that's not what I do. The broadcast sucks, the national tour broadcast, just to be honest with you. And it pains me to no end to see it the way it is now. So I'm just going to say it. Am I going too far, Kurt?
Hey, it's your show, man.
Right.
You can say what you want.
All right. Okay. Well, that's it for today, folks, here on Mostly Motorsports. We're going to do it all over again tomorrow at 12 noon Central Time. We hope that you'll join us right here tomorrow. I don't know who we're going to have on, but we're going to have somebody on. Kirk, who are we having on Wednesday?
Justin Haley.
Justin Haley is going to be on with us, right?
Cup driver. So yeah. He'll be on there. But he said Circle City tonight.
Yep.
And the other big event, hopefully it's not rained, Boone Speedway hosting the World of Outlaw Late Models tonight.
Oh, that'd be good.
So yeah. Keep an eye on that.
For sure. All right. Thanks, everybody, for tuning into the show. We appreciate it. We hope that we'll see you tomorrow right here on Mostly Motorsports. It's all been brought to you by Lucas Oil Products. It works. For Austin O'Neill, for Kirk Elliott, I'm Scott Traylor saying thanks for joining us. We'll see you tomorrow right here on Mostly Motorsports.
One of the main reasons for poor vehicle performance is a dirty fuel system. It can cause decreased fuel economy and actually do harm to your engine over time. By adding Lucas Fuel Treatment to your vehicle, it cleans and lubricates the entire fuel system. Pump, carburetors, fuel injectors, and valves as you drive. It also improves your vehicle's performance. It's a non-solvent product designed to protect both gasoline and diesel engines. Lucas Fuel Treatment. It works.
Go harder, faster, stronger with Rod and Supply. Whether you are running industrial, farming equipment, or a race car, Rod and Supply has the assortment of rod ends, radius rods, and specialty products that will help you lead the field in performance. Our superior design means our rod ends last longer and perform better, giving you the edge on the track and saving you money. Contact Rod and Supply or order online today at rodandsupply.com. We don't just sell them, we race them. Rodandsupply.com, serving the racing community for over 30 years.
Race fans, the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum is open 7 days a week, year-round, for you to come in and check out all of the wonderful race cars on display in the museum. And our online store at SprintCarStuff.com is open 24 hours a day for you to check out everything that we have in stock for Sprint Car fans. Whether it's for a birthday, anniversary, or Christmas, SprintCarStuff.com has it all. That's at the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum in Knoxville.
At Lucas Oil, we take pride in creating problem-solving products to make your car care easier. We protect your vehicle and make it run longer so you can focus on the things that matter most. Whether it's commuting to work, visiting a loved one, taking the kids where they need to go, going to the big game, or anywhere life takes you, Lucas Oil is committed to getting you there for all of life's important moments. Lucas Oil, it works.